I'm Dermot O'Leary, and welcome to From My Home to His with Bruce Springsteen. I don't think my 13-year-old self could conceive of a scenario where I'd be sitting here in London chatting to Bruce Springsteen in his home in New Jersey, but 2020 has thrown up quite a few surprises. Almost all of them bad, but this one is great. To explain why, let's rewind to 1986. I'm 13. Like so many of my generation, I'm signed up to the Britannia Music Club, a rather expensive but very alluring vinyl and cassette delivery service, which was advertised on the back of pretty much every Sunday newspaper supplement going. Now, as a fledgling teenager, I had very specific tastes, but those mavericks in the Britannia warehouse didn't care about that, and thank the Lord they didn't, as those guys changed my life, undoubtedly, for the better. Amongst the endless Phil Collins, still love that guy, and Simply Red tapes that dropped through my letterbox every month was an album called The Wild, The Innocent and The E Street Shuffle. Now, to say that album changed my life is an understatement. And Bruce Springsteen has been with me every step of the way for the past 30-something years. In that time, he's garnered 20 Grammys, won an Oscar and a Tony, he's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, he's been awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and more recently, performed a historic run on Broadway, which I was privileged enough to see. Despite America and much of the world being on lockdown, 2020 has been one of Bruce's most productive years. A new album recorded with the E Street Band, an accompanying film, and a hit radio show, which you can hear on BBC Sounds. I'm delighted to say Bruce is on the line from his home in New Jersey, and we'll be talking about his new album and film, Letter to You, and all things Bruce after this.
Walking handsome and hot. All the little girls' souls go weak when the man child gives them a double shot. And schoolboy pops pull out all the stops on a Friday.
Hey!
Hey, Bruce! How's it going?
It's all good, man.
The E Street Shuffle is the first... It's not the first song I heard, because obviously I heard stuff on the radio, but it's the first song that I bought, and it's the first album I ever bought. And I remember I remember. I got it out of the cellophane and put it on, and all I remember was this 13-year-old self going, what is this? This bombardment of my senses. Like, I've got lyrics, I've got rock and roll, I've got funk. I couldn't keep up. I mean, what are your memories back then of that tune and that album?
Well, that's a quirky tune, a quirky song. First of all, comes on with that Salvation Army horn sound.
Yeah.
Which was played by the guys in the E Street Band. Me, Mad Dog Vincent Lopez, Albie Talone played sax or something. All these different guys played what they knew of horns. Mm-hmm. And that's the sound that we ended up with.
Yeah.
And so I put it on in front of the tune because I thought it was funny. And then basically the tune is a funk soul. You know, the band was a rock and soul band at the time. You know, mm-hmm. It wasn't a straight rock and roll band. We played rock and soul and funk and a little bit of jazz. It was a very eclectic group of musicians at that moment. And so E Street Shuffle, where I took the main riff from Mickey's Monkey, the Major Lance song. That's basically, there's a place across the tracks whenever you're ready. It's Mickey's Monkey.
Right.
So I took the riff from Mickey's Monkey and I wrote my own song around it with my crazy lyrics and it ended up, and then I took the sort of last part where the band jams like crazy from a Curtis Mayfield song that I was into at the end of the time, a sort of a funk jazz. Yep. So it was a crazy piece of music.
I love the I've seen the film, by the way. I saw it yesterday, Letter to You, to go inside the album. You can't release an album now, by the way, without doing a film, because I'll feel kind of a little bit cheated if I don't see a film every time.
I know.
It's really nice.
We're two for two, so
yeah. But there's that great Clive Davis quote after your first album where he says, you're going to run out of the English language because you just crammed so much in there.
I know.
It's a letter to you. I mean, it comes across to me like it's really a love letter to friendship and an ode to your de facto family, the E Street Band.
Yeah, that and my fans, you know, and it's both personal and sort of universal, and that was the way it was meant, you know. It's sort of a little statement of what I've been doing for the past 45 years with myself, mm-hmm. and how it really came about as a result of I want to communicate and talk to you, you know. That was my greatest hope and desire, and so the record is a little bit about that.
I suppose there's a sense of real gratitude, I think, to this record, of the people around you. And I think whereas Western Stars is kind of you looking at the world as it is. I don't know if this is correct or not, but that's how it came across.
Well, basically, in Western Stars, the character is pretty much alone most of the time.
Yeah.
So, and that was just the nature of what I was writing about at that moment and what people think of when they think of the American West and that kind of individual. So that was a very, very different lay of the land that mm-hmm. I was writing about. This is really communal. Basically, this entire record is about community and working together as a group and as a family of sorts, and so it really is a bit of very much the opposite side of the coin.
Okay, let's have some music now. Let's go with the title track, "Letter to You." Letter to You, the title track from Bruce Springsteen's new album. The album and the film are out. Now, Bruce, tell us about how the process worked in this for this album and how you're revisiting how the process used to work. I mean, obviously, you're in charge, but Ellipsis. Like, how does it work? You take the song to the band and then they start kind of playing around with it?
That's basically it. You know, the film shows that I get up in front of the band, I have my acoustic guitar, I sing them the song. They write down a chart of sorts mm-hmm. that they will follow, and then we get into, we all pick up our instruments and we start messing with it a little bit, you know. People have ideas about an arrangement or an arrangement idea, or you'll see Steve works very closely with me in the arranging of the music, which has been the same thing that's gone on over the past 30 or 40 years. And, you know, and that's how that those it basically reveals the mechanics of the band and how we work in the studio.
Yeah, it's interesting to see behind the curtain. It was fascinating to watch. And the way you recorded it, you've not recorded this way since Born in the USA. I think the whole notion that you it's over like 5-6 days, something like that.
Yeah, and even with Born in the USA, the only cut that is actually live on Born in the USA is Born in the USA. Mm-hmm. Maybe Glory Days, I'm not sure. But everything else we cut as a track, basically, and overdub to it, and I would overdub a vocal. So this record it's actually unique, and I can't think of another record that we cut where we cut the entire band, entire instrumentation, and kept the vocal that I sang while we were cutting the track, you know. So it's completely live. Every vocal is a first take. And it's the livest recording we've ever done inside of a studio.
Yeah. And now you've sort of revisited this way of working. Could you envisage going back? I mean, is it the kind of thing you're looking at now going, you know what, why haven't we been doing this for donkey's years? You know, I mean,
Depending on the project, you know, yeah. I the template I took for this record was Darkness on the Edge of Town, because mm-hmm. the last thing we cut for Darkness on the Edge of Town was that song, Darkness. And we cut it in a studio that had been ripped apart where they left only the cement walls up. So the band was resonating like crazy, and we cut it live, and that's a live vocal.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, for this record, I only want to use the band's instrumentation. I don't want any horns, any strings, any extra. I got that out of my system on Western Stars, you know? So I said, I want a basic sound of our basic rock band. Two keyboards, you know, few guitars, drums and bass.
Sax.
And sax, of course, you know? And so that's what the idea I came in with, and that's what we performed.
And Bruce, how does it work? Did everyone kind of hunker down in your place? I mean, were they cooking? Was like little Stevie on eggplant kind of Parmigiana duty, or was Gary Talent on the omelets in the morning, or how did it work?
No, they show up when it's time to record, and I have absolutely no idea where they are before that.
So. Back in the day, was anyone a half decent cook? When the band had to
Clarence
kind of
Clemens,
rough it a little bit?
Clarence Clemens could get at the stove a little bit.
Yeah. What about you?
I learned to chef when I had my children.
Pancakes, wasn't it?
Yes, I was a short order cook for any diner in the United States between the hours of 5 and 12. I could make you anything you needed. So
yeah. After that, forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce, I hate to take it down a notch because I'm enjoying this, but I'm going to play Meeting Across the River now. This is oddly one of my first breakup songs, and I can't quite, I'm looking back now going, wow, I was troubled. But I can't quite work out why, but there's just something so wonderfully melancholic about it.
Yeah.
Is this you just kind of, when you wrote this from back in the day, was this just you putting yourself in the mind of a small-time hood and that kind of promised land of kind of Manhattan to Jersey?
Yeah, you know, that was the Jersey in the 60s and 70s was a hotbed of the local Italian mob, you know? And basically the folks that have settled here on the Jersey Shore are Italian and Irish.
Yeah.
And there was a big, big Italian population. And so consequently, Central Jersey was a bit of a seat for the Central Jersey Italian mob. And so, you know, those are just always stories that have floated around in our neck of the woods. And so I just kind of put myself in some shoes and wrote a little ballad about it.
All right. Bruce Springsteen, Meeting Across the River, which you can also hear on BBC Sounds from My Home to Yours.
Yeah.
Listen, let's talk inspirations for the album Letter to You and go back to your time in the Castiles and specifically the apprenticeship you served there and I suppose that the good stead that it counted in as you learnt your trade with the E Street Band and on your own. And also, looking back now, the age you are and the passing of George, your last bandmate in the Castiles.
Well, you know, the mid-60s to the early 70s was a golden age of rock bands, and every town was filled with them. Every kid in 1964 picked up a guitar. By 1966, they were playing in a band. And there were bands everywhere as well as venues for them to play at. There was firemen's fairs, union halls, Elks clubs, Knights of Columbus, CYO dances, high school dances, bowling alleys, pizza parlors. Everybody moved their chairs to the side and had a band on Saturday night.
Yeah.
So it was a golden age to be in a rock band, probably unlike anything, with the exception of when the punk revolution hit in the late 70s. So it was just an amazing time to be in a band. And I had a band, the Castiles. We were lucky enough that we stayed together for 3 years, which for high school teenagers was a long time for a band to stay together.
Yeah, eternity.
Yeah, so we were quite established in the Shore area from 1965 to 1968. Did a lot of shows, and you know, I learned a lot of my craft at that time, and I still use it today.
Mm. And looking back and reflecting on the passing of George, who was your bandmate, the last of the Castiles to be alive, right? That I know that had an impact on writing and recording this album.
Yeah, very much. You know, my old friend who, it was really there were two of us, and over the past summer, he got ill and he only had a few weeks to live, and I got to spend some time with him, and I realized after he died that I was the last remaining member of my first band, which was the guys tended to die a little young in that group for some reason, and it was a strange feeling, you know. It was just sort of like, whoa, that means something, you know. So I ended up, that was the spark that lit a lot of the songwriting for Letter to You, you know. It's kind of a look at time passing and your youth, both your youth in a rock band and being in a band now. So it's a bit of a time travel between 65 and Knee Street Band to this day. So it's the first record that I've done where my subject is music itself, where my subject is being in a rock band, rock and roll itself, music itself. It's the first bunch of songs I've ever written with that as a topic. So
we're gonna play If I Was the Priest Now. This is a terrific song. And one you've written a while ago. You're just so much more relaxed about the rules you live under now. And so you were kind of happy to revisit some old songs as well.
Yeah, that happened by accident. I cut, there's a track on the album called Janie Needs a Shooter, which I cut, I don't know, a year or two with the band here in the studio. And I was going to use it for just like a single on a record store day here in the States. But then I listened back, I said, that's too good. So I held on to it. And then I said, well, maybe there's a few other songs back from 1972 that pre Greetings from Asbury Park, that songs that didn't get on my first album. And when I looked, there was an album's worth of them. And so I picked a couple and thought it might be fun for the band to try them. And it was, you know. So it's an interesting blend of me as a young man and then the band today and me and my current voice singing those ideas, you know. It came out a lot of fun.
Did anyone remember them from the band? They were like,
The guys didn't know them, you know.
Right.
It was before any of my recordings, so.
Mm-hmm. This is If I Was the Priest.
There's a light on yonder mountain, and it's calling me to shine.
If I Was the Priest from the album Letter to You with Bruce Springsteen. Bruce, when you sat down to write this album, you were kind of not racked, but had a little bit of doubt about writing for the E Street Band again. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it's not that easy for me to write rock music. I mean, it's the thing I've struggled with for being known as a rock musician, I've struggled with writing that for my entire career. I mean, it was hard to write Born to Run. Mm-hmm. It was hard to write Thunder Road. It was hard to write Jungle Land, Backstreets. It was hard to write Darkness on the... It was all of my big rock songs I tended to find were all put me through some straits as far as as writing them. So I hadn't written music for the E Street Band in about 6 or 7 years at least. And, you know, so you wonder, hey, do I have any more of that music in me? And you never completely know.
I love the story of the guitar that a fan gave you on the Broadway show. Is the guitar that you used to effectively write this album with?
Yeah, I had a funny experience where I came out of my Broadway show one night and there was a kid standing on a sidewalk and he had a guitar, so I figured he wants me to sign it. Mm-hmm. I go to sign it and he goes, no, it's a present. I'm going to give it to you. I look at it and it's really nice. It's beautifully made, beautiful wood. And so,
but still, you must be thinking, I have a few of these already.
Well, you know, every guitar is different. And you never know. You don't get tired of having another one for some reason. they're all very different.
The same
thing. And so I looked at it and I just thanked him. I think he was from Italy, and I got in my car and I brought it home and I set it in my living room where it sat for 5 or 6 months. And then as I was about to go to write these songs, I realized it played beautifully. It was so comfortable to play and it sounded so true. Its intonation was perfect. And so I just started to write on it and all the songs came out of it.
You've got to track this kid down.
I'm sure he'll show up somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Bruce, we're going to go way back now and play play the Thunder Road from 75 Hammersmith. Now, I had no idea about this performance was as contentious for you as it was. It's only when I read your book. I listened to it. I just really enjoyed it. And but do you have memories of this now, or are they crystallized? Are they kind of memories of memories?
It was a horrible night for me personally.
this is my favorite rendition of this song.
And, you know, I got through it. It was a traumatic experience. And we came back a week later and played wonderfully at the Hammersmith Odeon to a fantastic crowd. But the first night, I was a little on edge, as probably was most of the band. But when I went back and looked at the film, it was filmed, which I did not look at for 30 years. And so 30 years later, I looked at the film and said, band was pretty good. And so it was actually quite a good concert.
Is it always that way? It's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is.
You never completely know, you know. You don't completely know.
Yeah. So. Thunder Road from Hammersmith 75. I liked it anyway, Bruce. Bruce, you've been very busy during lockdown. Have you found, I think what most people love so much about you is that as you've become so successful, you've never felt remote. You've never felt distant. You've always felt you're singing our songs. And
that's nice.
Thank you. And has COVID altered the world around you in that regard? Or, you know, do you still go out driving? Do you still look at the world around you and take it in?
Yeah, I mean, my day is not radically altered, you know, but everything around it is, it seems like. All my old hangouts are either closed or only serving outside, or, you know, a lot of my friends who own restaurants are struggling very, very, you know, to keep their heads above water.
Sure.
It's very, very difficult. And so, you know, I've just tried to stay as busy as I could with both the radio show helped me sort of continue to talk to my fans through music, which I've loved doing, and playing some of my own favorite records and favorite groups. And then I've had the record and film to keep me busy for quite a while. And I'm always trying to keep a project going, but it's altered everybody's world entirely. I mean, to put this music out and not be able to play it in front of an audience is heartbreaking. And, you know, but I mean, obviously, as far as, you know, I haven't struggled the way a lot of folks have,
of
and it's been a tough time for everybody. But it's altered everyone's world. That's all there is to it.
I think what comes across with this album, Bruce, is just there's the sense of gratitude that you have had and are enjoying a career and a period in your career that, like you said, you've kind of moved on. You've lived so many different lives, and the life you're living now, you're so grateful for.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I look back on the many different phases of creativity that I've been through, and they all feel like another life, you know. The life where I raised my children feels like another life. They're in their 20s and gone now. And if I look back on Greetings or The Wild and the Innocent, that feels like another life. You know, the 70s. So you know, at this point you go, wow, you know, it's been so good, you know. I mean, to make a living playing music with people that you cared about and who've cared about you is just about as lucky as it gets. And so that's just, you know, that's a horse I want to continue to ride if I can.
I want to play a song from the Broadway show now. I don't want to get too heavy here, but since that show, for me, the intro into Born to Run, where you kind of go full circle and you talk about the tree you grew up with, and then you drive you drive back into your old street, and the tree's not there anymore. It's just the best metaphor for grief and loss and love. But I didn't want to go too far down that road, because I think what we need at the moment is empathy and I guess a kind of a collectivism. And for me, the version of Land of Hope and Dreams encompasses that. Is this a very special song for you?
Yeah, because it was a song I wrote when the band got back together. We got back together in 98, and we were going out on the road, and I said, well, I would like to have at least one new song that would sort of be our manifesto for why we're back together and what we hope to accomplish. And so I wrote Land of Hope and Dreams, and we closed the show with it every night on the first tour that the band did after we'd been apart for a while. So it's over the years, it's had many, many lives, and it's proven, it's one of my best songs. Be seated.
Land of Hope and Dreams from the 2018 Broadway show. Are you able to have those moments now, Bruce? Do you ever take yourself off in the ranch and just with your music and your headphones and lose yourself? Or does life just not work like that anymore?
Yeah, I do. On the radio show, music's been, I'm listening to music all the time. It's just stuff to play. So I'm deep into music still.
Where do you find most of your music now? Is it just whatever comes to you?
I surf the internet. I'm like everybody else, I hear one thing, it leads me to something else. One thing leads, I remember a group from way back in the early 80s or something, and they lead me to something else. And I did a show on Cars this past week or so. So I remember, there was a group called the Screaming Blue Messiahs that used to write about American cars back in the early 80s. And then I remember the Tom Robinson Band hit 2468 Motorway. And these were all things, I probably hadn't heard these things in 30 years, but I went back and I dug them out and I used them in the show. So I'm always in there digging like some maniac record collector.
Listen, we're going to finish up with, it's not exactly a floor filler. It's pretty sad, but it's one of my favorite songs. This song still resonates as much as it did in 95, right?
Yeah, this is also one of my very best songs. And wrote it on, wrote the whole album back in the mid-90s. It was, 'cause I lived in California where the issues of immigration and the changing nature of the demographic nature of the United States was changing. And it was just a bit of a look at what was going on in California at the time, which is basically what's been going on in the United States and the issues that it involved in. And we have a very bad immigration policy, and that's been a nightmare for a lot of people who just come in, who want to work hard, take care of their families, and live a decent life, So this was something I wrote at the time.
Bruce, we've finished up with The Ghost of Tom Joad. Listen, I just want to thank you so much. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to talk to you, so thank you so much.
Well, thank you, my friend, and I hope I see you sooner than later.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce.
Take care now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.